Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivar Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Yashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira His divine grace today is the Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai go Premanande hi go from the Veta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All grace the assembled devotee. All grace the assembled devotee. All grace the assembled devotee. All grace the Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text 27. Paritaha, surrounded by, Vatsapai, cowherd boys, Vatsan, calves, Charayan, herding or tending, Vyaharat, enjoyed by traveling, Vidhu, the Almighty, Yamuna River, Upavane, gardens on the shore, Kujat, vibrated by the voice, Dvija, the twice-born, birds, Sankulita, densely situated, Angripe, in the trees. Parita Vatsa Parvatsam Charayan Vyaharad Vibhu Yamuna Pavane Kujad Dvijat Sankhulitang Ripe Parita Vatsa Parvatsang Charayan Vyaharad Vibhu Yamuna Pavane Kujad Dvija Sankhulitang Ripe Parita Vatsa Parvatsang Charayan Vyaharad Vibhu Yamuna Pavane Kujad Dvija Sankhulitang Ripe childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Yamuna River through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with vibrations of chirping birds. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Nanda Maharaj was a landholder for King Kamsa, but because by caste He was a Vaishya, a member of the mercantile and agricultural community. He maintained thousands of cows. It is the duty of the Vaishyas to give protection to the cows, just as the Kshatriyas are to give protection to the human beings. Because the Lord was a child, he was put in charge of the calves with his cowherd boyfriend. These cowherd boys were great rishis and yogis in their previous births, and after many such pious births, they gained the association of the Lord and could play with him on equal terms. Such cowherd boys never cared to know who Krishna was, but they played with him as a most intimate and lovable friend. They were so fond of the Lord that at night they would only think of the next morning when they would be able to meet the Lord and go together to the forests for cowherding. The forests on the shore of the Yamuna are all beautiful gardens full of trees of mango, jackfruit, apples, guava, oranges, grapes, berries, palm fruit, and so many other plants and fragrant flowers. And because the forest was on the bank of the Yamuna, naturally there were ducks, cranes, and peacocks on the branches of the trees. All these trees and birds and beasts were pious living entities born in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan just to give pleasure to the Lord and his eternal associates, the cowherd boys. While playing like a small child with his associates, the Lord killed many demons, including Aghasura, Bakasura, Palambhasura, and Gardabhasura. That's Dhenukasura. Although he appeared at Vrindavan just as a boy, he was actually like the covered flames of a fire. As a small particle of fire can kindle a great fire with fuel, so the Lord killed all these great demons, beginning from his babyhood in the house of Nanda Maharaj. The land of Vrindavan, the Lord's childhood playground, still remains today. And anyone who visits these places enjoys the same transcendental bliss, although the Lord is not physically visible to our imperfect eyes. Lord Chaitanya recommended this land of the Lord as identical with the Lord, and therefore worshipable by the devotees. This instruction is taken up especially by the followers of Lord Chaitanya, known as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And because the land is identical with the Lord, devotees like Uddhava and Vidura visited these places 5,000 years ago in order to have direct contact with the Lord, visible or not visible. Thousands of devotees of the Lord are still wandering in these sacred places of Vrindavan, and all of them are preparing themselves to go back home, back to God. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Yamuna River through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with vibrations of chirping birds. I often notice how Prabhupada embeds famous verses in his purports without quoting the Sanskrit. Especially in his earlier Bhagavatams, Prabhupada rarely quoted Sanskrit verses, but he's certainly referring to them. Just like here where he says, the cowherd boys were great rishis and yogis in their previous births. And after many pious births, they gained the association of the Lord and could play with him on equal terms. One of the prominent chapters about the Sakya Rasa, Krishna and his enjoying with the cowherd boys, in chapter 12, where Krishna wakes up in the morning and he decides that day he's going to skip breakfast and home and have a breakfast picnic. Out in the woods, out in the forest of Vrindavan. So he blows, he either plays his flute or blows his buffalo horn. I forget. Usually Balaram wakes up everyone, or the, like at least the cowherd boys. But this morning, Krishna got up early. And even though it was early and the boys were sleepy, when they heard Krishna calling, they all got up. And Krishna told them, today we're going to go early, we're going to have a picnic. So they went. So that was the day that Krishna killed Aghasura. The first part of that chapter talks about Krishna playing with the cowherd boys and different things that boys were doing, imitating the animals and just generally goofing off and having a good time. So in the context of that, there's a verse, Itam Sutam Brahma Sutam Abhutya, it begins. It says that that Krishna, he's, for the transcendentalists, he's the bliss of Brahman. And for the ordinary devotees, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And for the ordinary people, then he's just an ordinary person. He's seen as an ordinary person. But he's actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And these boys are able to play with him because kṛta puṇya puṇja, because they've accumulated heaps of pious activities, as Prabhupada translates it. So that seems to be what Prabhupada is referring to here when he said there were great rishis and yogis in their past. Of course, those who are playing with Krishna, they're not only sadhana siddhas, they're also, of course, Krishna has nitya siddha associates, eternal associates. Some of them are very famous. We'll hear a little more about that. And also here where it says, Prabhupada says, they were so fond of the Lord that at night they would only think of the next morning when they would be able to meet the Lord and go together in the forest for cow herding. So it's described in books. I have this one, I was referring to a few different books to try to prepare for this class about Sakya Rasa, the cowherd boys. So naturally, there's a chapter, actually Prabhupada, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's one chapter about Sakya Rasa, and Prabhupada divides it into two chapters in the Nectar of Devotion. So I was reading those, and also commentaries on especially this 12th chapter, the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing different things about the cowherd boys. And there's also a book by a devotee, his name is Nayanananda Thakur. And he comes to the line, he's the fourth generation down from a devotee, what was his name? Sundarananda, I think it was, right? Anyway, it says it in here. So he wrote this book, it's all about the cowherd boys. And it was written in 1731 AD. He's a direct descendant of one of Lord Nityananda's Dwadash Gopals, one of the 12 Gopals, the closest associates of the Lord. So he wrote this book, which Dasarath Sutaprabhu translated and published. He called Cowherd Boy's Nectar, or Sri Sri Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava. That's the original title. Sri Sri Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava. Rasarnava means ocean of rasa, just like Rasamrita Sindhu, essentially. And Prayo Bhakti is another name for the Sakya Rasa. So this book is about that, so I also consulted that. So one of the things in this book, this is actually quite an elevated book. It's meant especially for devotees who are aspiring, really aspiring. They're on the Raga Nuga platform and they want to be cowherd boys. So it has the meditation of the different times of Krishna's day. So when we hear that there's similar kinds of books that are written about Krishna and what the gopis do. Krishna and the gopis do all day long. And there, of course, it goes 24 hours. But the boys, cowherd boys' day only goes up to 10 o'clock at night, then it starts again at 6 o'clock in the morning. There's no leela going on during the night. So what's going on in the night? Actually, there is leela going on, but it's all going on in the... Now, Prabhupada says they're remembering what's going to happen the next day. But it's described in this book and other places that the cowherd boys, all night long, all they do is dream about Krishna. So for them, dreaming about Krishna and being, there's no difference. And they're also, because their day is so ecstatic, they're just in ecstasy all the time. They wake up, as soon as they hear Krishna's flute or Balaram's buffalo horn. One thing about this, when you read about It's interesting, actually, when you read a perspective of someone who wants to be a cowherd boy, you kind of get a different look. Krishna's leelas are a multifaceted gem. So you get a view from a different side. So naturally you hear more about Balaram, actually. You hear a lot about Balaram, Krishna Balaram. In fact, when we talk about Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna is sometimes referred to as Yugal Kishore. So Yugal means a couple, so the youthful couple. But Krishna Balaram are also, in this book, they're called Yugal Kishore. So they're the couple when you're in the Sakya Rasa. Of course, it's not limited to that because as Prabhupada, well, it's in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, explains that there are groups of cowherd boys who are involved in the Madhurya Leela, Krishna's interaction with the gopis. Because we hear about this, we hear about different stories where Krishna is there with his cowherd boyfriends, and they're also there sending messages back and forth and so on. So in any case, I was thinking Prabhupada is making a reference here to this idea that the cowherd boys at night, it seems like they're just going to sleep and nothing's happening at night, but actually they're enjoying all through the night with Krishna the same kinds of activities that they perform during the day. So it sort of gives it a little bit of information that I was, whatever I can remember, some things I tried to gather about this Sakya Rasa. Of course, Sakya Rasa is the second one. There's Dasya Rasya, then Sakya, the cowherd boy. And one of the main characteristics of the cowherd boys is that they feel themselves to be equal to Krishna, on an equal level to Krishna. Actually, there are six categories of cowherd boys, four main ones and two subordinate ones. And the four main ones, and the way Prabhupada translates them, is well-wishers, that's Sudit, that's the first, Sudit. So the well-wishers are older than Krishna. The Balaram is in that category. I have a little chart here somewhere, if I can find it, you better do it. Well, here it is. Bhanu Swami has translated the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. So in this, he has an outline of the Sakya Rasa. It's actually the third wave. You know, Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu has four, it's an ocean. So the way Rupa Goswami categorizes things there, he has four waves. So the eastern wave begins with the eastern wave. It goes east, south, west, and north. The east is Vaidhi Bhakti. And then I think south must be Bhava Bhakti. And then in the third we hear about all the rasas in the third wave, or the western wave. So this is from the western wave, third wave. And it's called, actually Rupa Goswami, he also uses this term, Preyo Bhakti, for Sakya Rasa, Preyo Bhakti. So Preyo Bhakti Rasa it's called. So there are these four kinds of cowherd boys. The first is Sudit, so they're older than Krishna. And each one of these has an ideal devotee, you might say primary devotee. And of course what happens is, for those who aspire, when you're on that high level and you feel a natural, spontaneous, truly spiritual attraction to serving Krishna in a particular way, then you serve these leading devotees. Just like in, you may know that in among the gopis, there are different groups of gopis and they have leaders. So the mandiris, for example, they serve under particular gopis in particular groups. So the same thing goes on with the cowherd boys. There are different groups. So there are these four subcategories, there are also ideals, or leaders, you might say, prominent personalities. So among those who are older than Krishna, the prominent ones are Lord Balaram and Mandali Bhadra. So Balaram, naturally, of course. Balaram, he actually serves in three ways. He serves sometimes as just a servant, thinks of himself as a servant of Krishna, and he thinks of himself as equal to Krishna, and he thinks of himself sometimes as a protector of Krishna. That Krishna is, in some sense, subordinate to him. He's like he plays the role of an adult. In fact, Mother Yashoda won't let Krishna go without Balaram going with him. She insists. And when Balaram comes home at night and he looks all tired and worn out, Krishna, then Mother Yashoda, she scolds Balaram, "You didn't take care of him. I'm not letting him go with you again. Your job is to take care of him." So anyway, so the first category is Sudit, those who are a little bit older than Krishna. And then the next group, they're called Sakha. Prabhupada calls them well-wishers. The next group is called Sakha, and Sakha just means friend. And I think Prabhupada translates it that way, or sometimes they're called general friends. So those are boys who are a little bit younger than Krishna. And they're just in love with him. You know how little boys, they look up to someone a little bit older? So they have that kind of mood. They're just so infatuated by it. Well, all the cowherd boys are, actually. They're all like that. When you read about Krishna's pastimes, they're always chasing after Krishna. They want to be with Krishna. And they place Krishna in the center, and they're always talking about how wonderful he is, amazing things that he does. So these little boys, they also have that mood. And the ideal among them is a devotee called Devaprastha. We have our Devaprastha Das here. So Devaprastha is the ideal of among the young cowherd boys. They're called Sakha. And then the next group, the third group, is Priya Sakha. Prabhupada translates this as confidential friends. Priya, of course, Priya means dear, but Prabhupada translates it like that. Now, they're the same age as Krishna. So there, in one sense, this is sometimes called, this is pure Sakha, because they're the same age as Krishna. And they're especially seen as interacting with Krishna just as friends, like climbing on his shoulders and, you know, fighting with him. There's a lot of fighting going on in Krishna's pastime. Besides wrestling, there's boxing and all the other kinds of fighting that they do. Of course, they're always inventing. All they do all day long is play. Well, they play and eat, pretty much. They play and they eat. It's amazing how often Krishna eats and his friends eat all day long. So then now among these Priya Sakhas, there's a special group. They're actually considered to be Krishna's Antakarana. Antakarana means our internal senses, which means mind, intelligence, ego, and consciousness. Yeah, consciousness. We used to talk about three, mind, body, mind, and ego, but there's a fourth one, chitta. So manas, buddhi, ahankar, and chitta, these four things, they're, you know, part of the essence of who we are, you might say. So Krishna has cowherd boys who are considered to be personifications of these aspects of himself. And their names are... Now, there's some difference of opinion, apparently, because there's a verse that describes them. It's from the Gautamiya Tantra, which is quoted quite often in our books, actually. Tantras, they tell you how to do things. And with some background information. So there, the Gautamiya Tantra, it has a section that's dealing with the cowherd boys. So when it mentions these four, the Sanskrit has, it says, Dhamma Su, Dhamma, Dhamma Su, Dhamma Vasu, Dhamma and Kinkini. So it sounds like it's Dhamma, Vasudhamma, Dhamma, Sudhamma, Vasudhamma, and Kinkini. These are the four. But this devotee, Nayanananda Thakur, he argues that the first Dhamma there is actually Sri Dhamma. Now, I actually mentioned this in class some years ago, and some devotee sent me an email later and says, it can't be Sri Dhamma. How can he witness? Because these four devotees, they know everything that Krishna does. Because there is mind, intelligence, and ego, and consciousness. So they know everything. So there is the argument that, well, how could Sri Dhamma be one of them? Because he would see Krishna and Radharani doing what they do. So there seems to be a little bit of a controversy where this Dhamma refers to Sri Dhamma or a devotee named Dhamma. Because there is a devotee named Dhamma also, just Dhamma. So in any case, these devotees, these very, very intimate devotees, they're in this category of the Priya Sakhas. who Prabhupada translates as confidential devotee. And so finally, the Priyanarma Sukha, they're also Priyanarma Gopis, you know, so the Priyanarma Sukhas, Prabhupada translates that as intimate friends. These are Krishna's most intimate friends. And one reason they're intimate, maybe the main reason, is they're the ones who are involved in the Madhurya Rasa. Now, it's stated, it came from one of Prabhupada's purports, I just read it recently, that there are cowherd boys who aspire for the, that was the way it was worded, they aspire for the mood of the gopis. So somehow, you know, they have this friendly relationship with Krishna. I mean, it's not that they want to enjoy, you say, you know, conjugal pastime, romantic, but somehow they're in tune with Krishna. They know about Krishna's love affair, you might say. I was thinking, just like in ordinary life, you know, some young man, he may be, you know, talking with his friends about his romance with this particular girl or whatever. So these boys know, and we hear, of course, how they send messages back and forth. And it's explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there are some, when the boys are with the gopis and Krishna's not there, then they side with Krishna. And when they're with Krishna and the gopis aren't there, then they side with the gopis. And when they're both there, both the gopis and Krishna, then they side with Krishna. We hear about that, right? The different quarrels go on, so the cowherd goes, they take Krishna's side. So all they do all day long, basically, they just play all day. So that's... Now, you know, in the... In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the earlier chapters, second chapter, it talks about how when you get to the stage of bhava, then you have these uddipanas, the things that excite the rasa, basically. They bring out the ecstasy. And they are different for the different rasas. So there's a whole list of things that excite the cowherd boys, you can say, and their enjoyment, their rasa, their tasting, their relationship with Krishna. And these are all, you know, these are listed there, and there's some discussion of them. The first one that's listed is simply Krishna's form. There's a lot of talk about Krishna's form, actually, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and that's the devotion, and how enchanting it is. You know, the residents of Vrindavan, they just have to see Krishna's form. That puts them in ecstasy. Basically, they're always in ecstasy, something in relationship to Krishna. So they see his form, and we hear also how he's decorated. When Krishna goes out into the forest with the cowherd boys, first Mother Yashoda decorates him like anything. Just like our, you know, our deities are so opulently dressed with so many things, so many details. I'm always amazed how much the devotees do. So Krishna also, he has also, in my last class I mentioned how if you read detailed descriptions of Lord Vishnu, you see he's got armlets and leglets and everywhere, bracelets and rings and so on. So Krishna also gets dressed like that and goes out into the field, into the forest. So that's so attractive, the boys just want to see him that in the morning. Then his horn, Krishna has, all the cowherd boys have buffalo horns. Sometimes I wonder because we hear about Krishna going, herding not only cows, but also buffaloes and goats. So you wonder, what's Krishna need goats for? I'm not sure about the goats, but at least the buffaloes, these are the water buffalo, apparently. They get the horns from them and they make the buffalo horn. And everything that Krishna and the cowherd boys have, of course, everything is so beautiful. Prabhupada was talking here about the beauty of the forests of Vrindavan and the gardens. So the forests are not, he mentions many trees, but, and we look at our forests and they're kind of plain. You just look, it's all green and, you know, maybe you have just pine trees for miles and miles around. But just imagine the Vrindavan forest. It's a kaleidoscope of color and fragrance and just beauty. It's just mind-boggling how beautiful it is. In fact, in the description of Krishna's day, the day is made up of 40 dandas. Danda is a period of time, 24 minutes, I think it is, something like that. So it's broken down. The Krishna's day First they do this, then they go to this force, then they go to that force, and then, you know, they're all different things that take place. So one of the things they do is they stop and look at the scenery. Because Vrindavan is so beautiful, even though they're there every day, they're going into the forest and they're playing and all the different things they do. It's just so beautiful and so enchanting. Beyond our imagination, really. All the, you know, the colors and so on. And the animals, Prabhupada mentions the animals here. We hear a lot about the birds, all this chirping and singing. And of course, they're glorifying Krishna and Krishna's pastime. So this is in the context I was saying, the beauty. So everything is so beautiful. Everything is so well decorated. So even the cowherd boys, they're buffalo horns. They're not just plain buffalo horns. They're studded with jewels. They're just extremely beautiful and opulent. And then Krishna's flute, of course. He has different kinds of flutes. And the other boys also play flutes. That's part of what they do. And they also make musical instruments in the forest. They too. I remember when I was a kid, we used to take a piece of grass and put it between our thumbs. You could blow on it, make it like a reed, right? You may have done that. So they make flutes and different instruments out of things in the forest. And Krishna's conch shell also. We hear about that more in Krishna's other leela outside Vrindavan. Actually, I wanted to mention too, I mentioned that four categories. There are also two other categories. They're called subordinate categories. And one is the Vidushikas. Vidushikas means the class clowns. Like Madhu Mangal, we're all famous with Madhu Mangal. So that's considered a category. And the other one is, what is it called? Vitta, I think it is. And those are boys who are very aesthetic. They have a very aesthetic sense. So they're into dressing really nicely. And they're also experts in loving affairs, conjugal affairs. So they advise Krishna about in his loving affairs. So these are two other categories. Now Madhu Mangal, I'll just throw this in because it's coming to my mind. Every night is part of Krishna's, all the things he does all day. There's a lot of variety, actually, all these little periods of the day. They do different things in the forest, and they come home in the evening. We hear about them entering into Vrindavan, how everyone is just waiting. Everyone is on edge, waiting for the boys to come home. And as they enter into the village of Vrindavan, they start peeling off because the boys are going to their own homes. And then there's these sad farewells as the boys are taking off. This is like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, late afternoon. But they go for a while, and we hear about what Krishna does when he gets home and how he's received by Mother Yashoda and so on. He's fed naturally. And of course, one thing that's interesting about, they have several meals. Before Krishna even leaves home, he eats 2 or 3 times, and he gets to the forest, he eats again, then they have a big meal just before lunch. And almost every time Krishna eats, he finishes, he washes his mouth, and then he takes betel. Which is interesting, actually. it's part of the culture, the transcendental, eternal, spiritual culture of Krishna takes this mild intoxicant. And all the boys, that's what they do. They take a little rest and they chew on some betel and whatever they enjoy in that way. So it's not that he's, you know, sneaking and doing it in the woods, but he's doing it at home too. Mother Yashoda is giving him betel. By the way, that's the way it's pronounced, beetle. I looked it up on the online dictionary pronunciation. Beetle. Beetle. You can press this button on how to pronounce the little speakers there. So it's like, beetle.
Like the Beatles?
It's not. Yeah, like the Beatles. Not betel. Sometimes they'll just say betel. It's beetle. So anyway, so in the part of the evening, I was just mentioning they're eating, of course. And then there's entertainment. Actually, again, I was saying the boys go home, like Sridhama and Sudhama. They both live in Vrishabhanupur. Because Sridhama is right around his brother. So they go home, but then they come back. They take a little rest. They eat. They're received very wonderfully. And they also, these boys, they have subordinates, like they're group leaders. So they get served by their, they have servants at home, and they also have boys who are, you know, subordinates in their group, and they also serve. They practically, they serve them like Krishna is being served. When Krishna goes home, one thing that happens is he sits on a throne. There's a temple. It's described as a temple, where even where Krishna sleeps is described as a temple. But he's, you know, honored there. And Mother Yashoda actually offers arati to him. So these boys, they get the same kind of treatment, like Sridhama and Sudhama from subordinates. They get treated like that also. So anyway, they go home for a while, but then they come back. One thing Krishna does, I don't know if he does it right when he gets home or just after he eats and takes some more betel and rests a little bit. That's the other thing. They take a lot of naps throughout the day. A lot of eating and betel taking and taking naps. And then they get up and they're refreshed for the next part. So anyway, so Krishna goes to milk the cows. That's part of his what he does in the evening. And he does, he milks some himself, and he also, he has servants who do it, and also friends who are just always with, there's always some friends, pretty much, except when he sleeps at night. So they milk the cows as well. And there's one scene during the day, like I'm getting these little thoughts about different things that are kind of coming in because I've been reading about it. So one part during the day, actually Krishna leaves for a couple of hours. He just sort of disappears. Of course, we know where he goes, but the cowherd, then Balaram takes over. Basically, Krishna and Balaram are always in charge. So then it's only Balaram. So then they go, they do different things. One of the things they do is they go to Shyamakund, which is interesting because they don't go to Radhakund. They go to Shyamakund. And in the area of Shyamakund, Sudama and Sridhama, they're like Krishna's closest friends. It's in, even though we hear of other intimate devotees, they really seem to be Krishna's buddies, Sridhama and Sudama. So they also have their kunjas near Shyamakund. They have their groves where they are, and we hear about these, their descriptions of the gopis' groves in different places. So the cowherd boys also have their groves, or bushes, probably, kunja probably translates as bushes. So they had their kunjas, and so Balaram, when he goes, and he visits these boys, Sudama and Sridhama, he visits them in their groves. Of course, he's with them, so they take him there. And then, I think it's a little earlier, where there's one of the forests that they go from one forest to the other. So in one of those forests, Balaram drinks a little too much honey. One of the things that he does, Balaram has one earring. He's generally described as having one earring. And it's said that that's an indication that he's always intoxicated. That's why he's only got one earring on. There's a description somewhere, too. Some people say it's on the right, and some people say it's on the left. But the explanation for why he has it on the right and not the left, because his left ear is next to Krishna. So if Krishna puts his head on Balaram's shoulder, he doesn't want his earring to scratch Krishna. So he doesn't have an earring on that ear. He just has it on the other. That's another explanation for why he only has one earring. He doesn't want to scratch Krishna with his earring. So anyway, so at night, there's a big celebration in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj's palace. They have entertainment. They have a talent show. So, of course, there's singing, dancing, and plays go on. Goes on for quite some time. And Krishna, he brings his close friends, and they sit next to him. He even gives up his own seat. One thing is, when the boys leave, of course, Krishna's very sad to see them go, but then they come back a little while later, and then Krishna's so ecstatic. I mean, when they leave, Krishna actually starts crying. When they're going home, he doesn't want to leave them. They're so attached to each other that they're going, you know, now they have to go home and do some things at home. But then they come back. So they watch all this entertainment. So then there's like any big show, there's a big grand finale, and everyone takes their bows. And Krishna distributes things. He gives away clothing and jewelry and prasadam and so on. So then they clear out. So then there's a one-man show, Madhu Mangal. After all of that, he gets a one-man show and basically does whatever he wants to and just has everybody laughing on and on and on. And he takes on different roles. Sometimes he does things to scare people. He acts like a thief or some kind of wicked person. But mostly just tells a lot of jokes and makes, basically that's what he's an entertainer. So he does all kinds of things. He's an expert at entertaining. So he does all kinds of things like that. So the boys go home. I'm pretty sure they come back again, actually, if I remember correctly. And then these ideas are coming from this, or this, these leelas are coming from this book, Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava. Although we do get some indication from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because the way Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu works is Rupa Goswami will make some point explaining something about rasa, some detail about rasa. Like, you know there are different bhavas, Vyabhichari bhava, Sanchari bhava, Stai bhava, and so on, all of these, Anubhava. So all of these have different symptoms, characteristics. Rupa Goswami goes into great detail about these, which ones are compatible, and, you know, there's wet and dry, and all these things. So many details about it. But whenever he explains something, first he'll make the philosophical point, then he illustrates it with some Sanskrit verse. And it seems like some of these verses come from the scripture and they're mentioned. This is from Padma Purana or Srimad Bhagavatam sometimes. But many of them, Rupa Goswami just knows all these things and he's composed the verses. He's actually composed the verses pointing these things out. So what we, in this Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava, one thing about this book, this Prayo Bhakti Rasarnava, he follows Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Although he's focused on the Sakya Rasa. But he also quotes a lot, and he credits Rupa Goswami for the things that he's saying. So this, what we hear in this book is at the end, it's also, because this devotee comes in the line of Sudama, it's in some ways it's from the perspective of Sudama. So what we at the end of the day, what we hear is about Sudama going home and what happens to him, him taking rest and dreaming about Krishna. But we don't hear about Krishna actually, Mother Yashoda putting him to rest and so on, because Sudama is not a witness to that. He's not there at that time. There may be little boys, just like we hear in the Nectar of Devotion, maybe remember this, where Mother Yashoda is dressing Krishna in the morning, and there are little boys standing at the door, younger boys, and they're looking, peeking in, because they're so excited, they want to see Krishna right away. So the Mother Yashoda says, "Why are you standing there? Come in, come in." So the little boys come in, and then they help or make it harder, I don't know, somehow they try to assist Mother Yashoda in dressing Krishna and so on. So naturally things are happening at night when Krishna goes to bed. Actually in the morning when the boys first come, I'll just mention the waking of Krishna. Balaram blows the horn, buffalo horn, so the boys start coming, especially the most prominent boys. So they come and they stand out in the courtyard because Krishna is still sleeping. The others wake up to Balaram's horn, but Krishna doesn't wake up. He's had a long night. So Krishna doesn't wake up. So the boys are out in the yard yelling, "Krishna, wake up!" So then Mother Yashoda lets them in, and Krishna's still sleeping. So then they're in his bedroom, and they're able to look at him. So first they just look. They just look at him. They just stare at him. He's so beautiful. Because he has a wonderful bed, and it's on a jewel, awesome. And in one place I read that he has he wears a yellow dhoti, he has a yellow blanket, yellow bedspread, and he has multicolored pillows spread all over the place. Actually, that reminds me to describe how some of the colors of the boys are mentioned. Now, I saw this translated in different ways, but one translation was multicolored. Maybe Krishna has multicolored friends, so that might be interesting. But generally, it seems that a lot of them are either golden-colored, Gora, or else Krishna's color, dark-colored. And they sometimes dress like Krishna too. They wear yellow and they imitate the way he's dressed. So anyway, so the boys, they come and see Krishna. And they don't wake him up themselves. Krishna's servants ultimately wake him up. And Mother Yashoda is there and, you know, wake up, sleepy boy, and so on. So she takes a cloth and dries off his face. And so then there's a little conversation goes on. Then Krishna gets up and he takes a pot of water with him and he goes to brush his teeth and wash with the pot of water. And then he goes to the Goshala. Well, I think he eats something first. He definitely eats something first. Yashoda, she's not going to let him go 5 minutes without feeding him something. So she gives him kheer and butter. So Krishna's got a pretty strong appetite. He wakes up in the morning and eats kheer and butter. In fact, he eats a lot of milk products. That's, you know, the staple. Pretty much the snacks are all, not all, but often the snacks, and of course, they include milk products. In the late morning, where he also has a big breakfast, actually, at home. Then when he gets to the forest, a little later in the late morning, again, they have a big meal. And that has sabji and, you know, puris and all these things, samosas and so on. And they also eat, when they're out in the forest running around, they eat fruits from the trees. So no question of indigestion, they don't seem to have a problem with that. So it's all enjoyment. It's all playing, goofing off, fighting with each other, play fighting. Sometimes it even seems like they get angry with each other. They get so much into the fighting. And of course, then Krishna is resting here and there, and the boys are massaging his legs and so on. So this is Uddhava. We can just imagine what's in Uddhava's mind, because Uddhava spent, you know, months in Vrindavan. So mainly we hear about Uddhava, he spoke to the gopis, but then he took all the residents in Vrindavan, or they took him around to the different spots, and they were describing all the things that Krishna did, all the pastimes that he did in different places in Vrindavan. So Uddhava is speaking this verse about how Krishna was surrounded by the cowherd boys and enjoying in different ways. It's interesting, the last time I gave class was about the gopis, and this time it's about the gopas. So again, it's a matter of perspective. You see the focus, because Krishna's unlimited, he's not bound in a certain way. I remember when I first read, I tried to read one of these books by, you know, you might say elevated, about Madhurya Rasa. I didn't get very far because it was a little too intimate for me, actually. It can get quite graphic when you're on a material platform. But one thing I noticed, that I was kind of, I don't know if disturbed is the right word, but the way Krishna more or less lies or keeps the truth away from his mother, I kind of felt sorry for Mother Yashoda. Because, you know, Krishna, when he wakes up in the morning, he's got these love bruises on him, and he's wearing Srimati Radharani's sari. And so Mother Yashoda is saying, why you got a blue? What are you doing with this blue? And Balaram, he says, oh, that's mine. You know, yeah. He accidentally took mine. So anyway, I had this feeling like, oh, poor Mother Yashoda, she doesn't really know everything. But of course, that's, you know, it's my material way of thinking. Obviously, she's not suffering in any way. She's completely satisfied in her relationship with Krishna. But Krishna can fully satisfy. That's the idea. Krishna can fully satisfy everyone he interacts with. Everyone is just enthralled by Krishna, with no thought of, you know, leaving him or doing anything else. Or it's just that he's their life. He's their life. They could no more not serve. Actually, it's about service, really. They want to serve Krishna. They could no more think about not serving Krishna than stop breathing. They can't do it. So we see that in the focus. Now, the way it works in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we hear about, there's a chapter on Dasya Rasa. Then we hear about how the servants are so absorbed in Krishna. Then we hear about how the coward boys are so absorbed in Krishna in the next chapter. And then of course, we hear about the parental affection. how Mother Yashoda is so absorbed, and then finally the gopis. So they're all completely satisfied. And naturally, that's their position. So we were hearing something about that here by Uddhava, Sriman Uddhava Prabhu. So the verse again. So I went pretty long. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he traveled on the shore of the Yamuna River, through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with vibrations of chirping birds. All right. Ragatmika Prabhu.
Thank you for all this nectar. Really sweet. So you said Krishna sleeps on a throne. But surely when he was just young, he was sleeping with his mother. And then when did he go onto the throne?
When did he go on the throne?
At what age? Because he was, what was it? Shivaram Swami's book, one of those books, describes him sleeping with his mother. And then she wakes up and leaves him there.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing, I'm sorry. My hearing is getting shot. I have a hard time hearing the question.
Oh, yeah, in one of Shivaram Swami's books, it states that he, as a 2 years old, sleeping with his mother, and she wakes up, but she leaves him in bed for some time. So you were saying that he sleeps on a throne.
She put Krishna on a throne. Is that what you're saying?
No, you were saying Krishna sleeps on a throne.
Oh!
And I was wondering at what age did he...
Oh, I'm sure he has many thrones.
Yeah.
He has, there's a room called the Mohan Mandir, I think it's called. So, you know, the room is called a Mandir. It's translated as a temple. So his bedroom is, well, every place Krishna goes is a temple. I guess you can look at it that way. And then there's, I was looking for it, I couldn't find it, but one time I came across, there's actually a graphic, a chart of Nanda Maharaj's palace in all the rooms, because this is described in some of the scriptures. On the northeast corner, there's this, and here, there's this, and so on. So, actually, one thing I was thinking when I was reading this, you don't hear about Krishna going to Mangalarti or chanting japa. You don't hear about Krishna being a religious boy, you might say. I mean, he's living among religious people, the Brijvasis, but you don't hear about him doing any sadhana or anything. I mean, of course, in Dwarka, he has a morning program. But in Vrindavan, he just plays all the time. Now, we do hear, of course, about the gopis worshipping, Katyayani or Surya. Srimati Radharani is a devotee of Surya Dev, and so on. And we do hear that Nanda Maharaj also is worshipping Narayan or Shila, I think it is, in his house. But in this, when I was reading about this Krishna's day, I didn't hear anything about that. And then, then Krishna goes into the temple and does Mangal Arati. He's too anxious to get out. His boys are calling. He's got to get out and go to the forest. Basically, he just plays all the time. That's what they do.
Of course, we know when he got older, he used to get up and worship himself.
Yeah, in Dwarka, he worshiped himself. That was his morning program. Meditated on himself. So he must have been trained in his youth, right? Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to do it in Dwarka. Of course, that's Vasudeva Krishna. That's another thing. The other Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He plays all the time. He's not going to go to work, rule a kingdom.
He was responsible for washing the cows.
Hmm?
Yeah, he was responsible for washing the calves, so.
Yeah.
He couldn't just be goofing off.
Actually, we find that sometimes the calves go astray and they have to go out looking for them. In fact, there's one scene, when Krishna's gone, they're, one of the things Balaram and the boys are doing, they have to start rounding up the cows, the calves. They're in caves, and the boys were goofing off and not paying attention or something, so the calves are all over the place. So the boys are getting worried because they're not able to find them all. But as soon as Krishna comes back, then they tell Krishna the situation. And Krishna plays his flute. When he plays his flute, his flute produces each the name of each calf. So then all the calves comes running. They all come running to Krishna. The boys are in ecstasy. Oh, Krishna saved the all the calves. And they're all the calves are all looking up at Krishna. He's playing his flute and with their names. And so he's always the hero. That's the other thing. Krishna's always the hero. And that's why the boys are so enthralled by him, because Krishna is so wonderful. He always comes through. So yeah, but of course Krishna can take care of the cow. He just plays all day, basically. Prabhupada said like that. He said they were caring for the calves, but actually they were just playing all the time. So that's he can play and take care of the calves at the same time. He just has to call them and they all come. All right, we're a little late. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.